I was reading an article this week about a young man. He's a missionary kid. His parents are International Mission Board missionaries in Ghana in West Africa. That's our number one international missions partner. And the story was about how he won some medals for the nation of Ghana at a world unicycling event. And he became somewhat of a local hero and even a national hero. The vice president of Ghana retweeted his picture of he wearing his medals. But there's a story behind that. And I wanted you to see that story, how he got the unicycle and what he's done with that unicycle there in his country, his new home country, Ghana, and his friends.
Ago,
Ami.
Trey, my friend, when he came back from the United States of America, he brought a unicycle so that we could all try it together. He wanted to teach me. Normally, I see a bicycle which has two wheels. I've never seen one with just a wheel. So I was so amazed, and I just couldn't wait to try it out.
I'm an American. I live in the northeast region of Ghana. My family and I stay at a mission hospital where my mom works as a surgeon. I came here at age 8, and I've been here for pretty much half my life. When my family and I went back to the U.S., I learned how to unicycle thanks to my dad. And when I brought it back to Ghana, I taught my friends how to ride.
We ride almost every day. And in the afternoon, Trey always calls us and we get our unicycle and walk over to the school to ride because there are many obstacles and pace for us to learn new tricks. And sometimes we ride to entertain the kids.
They have never seen it, and it's wonderful to them to see us all riding together.
Here in Ghana, I ride with Dan and Osman, and I'll show them YouTube videos of other people doing tricks, and we'll try to learn those tricks together. And so the funnest thing is being able to do that with friends and laugh when you mess up and encourage each other.
Unicycle has taught me a lot. I've learned that I don't have to give up at the early stage of learning everything, and so I keep on trying each time I fail. We being the only unicycling team in Ghana here makes it so nice because nobody else has the experience in riding the unicycle, and so people kind of look up to us to teach them or to learn about the unicycle more.
It would be really cool if in the future more people learn how to ride and then we eventually have a club here in northern Ghana. I'm really glad that my friends are eager to learn how to ride the unicycle because it's given us something we can bond over.
We have a proverb in Mampule which says Bob Govela, which means many are nice. Being together with my friends makes it more fun for me to ride unicycle and to learn new tricks because I get confidence from them.
It's really cool that I've gotten this opportunity to come to the Unicycle World Championships. But what would be even more awesome would be if my friends could come with me as a Ghana team. We could compete all together. Everything's more fun when you're doing it with other people and you share that thing together.
Everything is more fun when you do it together. I mean, he learned how to, when his folks had to come stateside during the pandemic, he was bored. His dad got him a unicycle at a pawn shop just to pass the time. He got really good at it. But the cool thing is when he moved back to Ghana, when they were able to return on the field, he took two more unicycles with him for each of his friends. And since then, people have started giving him unicycles. It just shows how just you can bond together over something simple like that. Everything is more fun when you do it together and share it with your friends. That's so true. The question, though, that we want to answer this morning, though, is how do you get together? How do you do that? How do you break the ice and find things that you share together with your friends? I understand it seems natural for some people, but it's not so easy for some folks. As I mentioned last week, 3 out of every 5 people in here this morning probably feel lonely on any given day. Jamie Allen, founder of the IF Gatherings, and then also the author of this book that I've looked at along with some others, called Find Your People. She says the most frequently asked question she gets online is, How do I make friends? And it's kind of crazy if you think about it. We live and move in circles around people all the time. We're always around crowds of people at work, at school, when we go shopping, when we watch sports. Seldom are we actually alone. We're with people a lot in this culture, in this society. And then when you add to that social media, we're exposed to just millions of people at any one given time. And in the midst of all that, in such a hyper-connected world, how did we become so lonely? Well, I want to address that. I've spent a lot of time the past few weeks looking into that question and those questions, and I want to share some real practical steps with you this morning. I talked about the dangers of isolation. Last week, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but mostly, I just want to help you find some ways to connect with others. As I also said last week, from beginning to end, the Bible story and the stories throughout the Bible, they just assume this connectedness. They assume people belonging to and depending on one another in a group. So let's see some examples. This morning, I'll give you some examples just from Jesus' life on how people connected. If you have a Bible, open it to Luke chapter 10, verse 38. If you don't have a Bible, we'd love to give you one. You can pick one up at the Welcome Center. We have it in both English and Spanish. And so we'd just love to give you one to pick it up. If you're looking for it, Luke is about three-fourths of the way through the Bible. It's in the New Testament of the Bible. And so that's three-fourths in. And it's one of the first four books of the New Testament called the Gospels, or Good News Stories of Jesus. Four different eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. We're looking at Luke's account. And Luke is the third of those three, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then John. So this is a story that we have shared many, many times here in this church. And I think the reason is because it's just so relevant to where we all live. I think most of us can relate to one of these two sisters, Mary and Martha. So let's begin. Verse 38 of chapter 10 of the book of Luke. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Very hospitable, Martha. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him, to Jesus, and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." She was not at all expecting the response that she was going to get from Jesus. "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Jesus' response was basically, "Chill out, Mary. I do care. I do care. But I'm not going to ask Mary to come and join you. You need to join. I'm not going to ask Martha to come join you. You need to join Mary. You need to let go of all these preparations and join us." Here's the point. Mary was connecting with Jesus and his friends that day, which is something we all need. We all need both Jesus and friends. Martha was distracted by the expectations of being a host and all the unnecessary priorities that seemed so important to her. She had people coming to her home. That's a good thing. She opened up her home, but she wasn't opening up her heart. She was just thinking that I just do this, and this is what we do, and we open our home to this. And she was missing Jesus. She wasn't connecting with him. So how do you make friends? How do you connect? How do you connect? Well, what's your priority? This is what Jesus was talking to Martha about. What is your priority? People or things? Because for Martha, it was all about stuff, things. I'll give you three different areas to consider that sometimes that take our lifestyle and tend to isolate us, okay? The first is your expectations. Your expectations can isolate you from people. Are you doing too much? Do you just have too much on your plate? Are you doing so much that you don't have time for real friendships? One of the greatest enemies of connection is overcommitment. Overcommitment sometimes, and then just commitment to the wrong things. This overcommitment, it creates an unnecessary distraction from relationships. Martha was overcommitted to tasks and expectations of what she thought a host was supposed to do. And she was undercommitted to relationships. She was missing what Jesus said was the most important thing. It didn't matter what time they had supper that evening. What mattered was being with Jesus. And I want you to think about all the things you do. If you have children at home, all the things you and your kids do every week and on the weekends. Think about all those things that you do, whatever it is you place a priority on, whatever you think is really important. And what you think is important, just look at your calendar and you'll find out what you think is important. Then ask yourself, how important are each of these things to our lives? Each of these things we do on the weeknight, the weekends, how important are these to our lives? Are they connecting you to Jesus and other people? And both are important. So consider that. Consider what your priorities are and whether or not they're really most important, as Jesus would say. And here's something else you don't think of as a lifestyle, but it is. It's habits. And not just habits, but addictions, things that you're addicted to. You may not think that a habit you can't shake off really is a barrier to friendship, and it might be something you don't think is that big of a habit. It may be something seemingly harmless, like just watching sports all the time, or you're into gaming every moment you have, or just watching the news all the time. Or it could be something much more serious, like a chemical addiction or a sexual addiction. I want you to think about those habits. Addiction, whatever form it takes, it isolates you. It pulls you away from people. I'm reading a book called The Freedom Fight, and it's mostly about getting free from sexual addiction. And it says the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. Let me say that again. The opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it is connection. Connection is essential for people to break free from any kind of addiction, especially chemical and sexual addictions. Ask anyone who's been in a 12-step program. You need other people. You need connections with folks. And that's why severely injured patients who are given like a medical form of heroin for months on end generally tend to step away from it and just stop when they're released from the hospital, especially when they go home to a loving family, because connections are what free us from so many different addictions. Okay, that's kind of heavy. So I'll throw you a softball now. Okay, when we think about lifestyle, overcommitments, habits, addictions, it can pull you away and isolate you. But here's another one. Here's something that's very subtle, but it is changing our lifestyle. And I'm afraid we're just going to keep moving into this more and more. And this is one of those things that will isolate us, and that's convenience. I want you to reconsider the value of convenience. We developed some things when we had to be isolated during the pandemic that now we kind of liked and we're sticking with, even though we don't need that isolation as much. Think about the things you increasingly do alone. Things like curbside shopping instead of going into the grocery store, or getting takeout and bringing it home instead of going into the restaurant. Now listen, it's more convenient. It saves time. It's more efficient, but it's also isolating. I want you to stop and think about some of the great conversations, impromptu, unplanned conversations you've had in the grocery store aisle, or at a restaurant, on your way to your table, or as you're walking out, when you run into someone you haven't seen in a while, and you just have this incredible conversation, and you walk away thinking, man, we need to get together more often. That was so good. I'm so glad I ran into them. You'll miss that when you stay in your car. And just think about other things that are convenient but pull us away from people. A Rwandan pastor who visited the U.S., he made this observation about all of our conveniences, things that are so much more convenient for us that we don't have to do with others that in his country you have to do together with people. He said the more resources a person gets, the more walls he or she puts up, and the more lonely they become. So I want you to consider rethinking your lifestyle. Think about your priorities, your commitments, your overcommitments, the habits, perhaps the addictions you have, and then also just the conveniences that you're becoming used to that may not be so necessary and may be more isolating than you realize. That's a start. But once you've begun addressing those distractions, what's next? Well, let me just give you some practical ideas on how to start and initiate some friendships, okay? First of all, look around to see who's already near you. Who are the people that are already in your orbit, in your world? This might be friends you already have who could become closer friends. Or it could be neighbors, classmates at school. It could be coworkers. It could be your kids' friends' parents. That's a great source of friendships because you'll have so much in common. Who is already in your life? These are some people you already have some kind of connection with. You can build from there. You know, one of the most important factors of community and friendship is proximity. It's proximity. It is not enough to have dear friends or family who live far away. That's good. That's healthy. It's good to be connected with them. But you need people who are close by, people who can come and be with you face to face, people you can go and be with face to face. As this Hebrew proverb reminds us from a couple thousand years ago, better a neighbor nearby than a relative far away. There's such truth to that. We need people who are close. So what are you already doing and who are you already with? There are people around you who could become much more than just acquaintances if you invited them into your life. So I want you to think about the people in your world. You might even want to go home and write down like different places that you go and who are those people that you run into. Good friends, acquaintances, just people you barely know. Just think of all those folks, people you run into at school, at work, the gym, church, your neighborhood. Just think about the people that you run into on a regular basis. Pick one or some of them that you'd not like to get to know better. And here's the hard part, okay? Reach out and make a connection. It could be awkward. It can. But the reward is great if you put yourself out there. Something we're always saying on our staff is don't say other people's no for them. Don't think of someone that you'd like to get to know better that you're going to reach out to and say, yeah, but they wouldn't. They wouldn't want to hang out with me. They wouldn't respond. They wouldn't want to do this. Don't say their no. Just reach out there. And so ask people to do things with you. It's like this boy Trey in his unicycle. He brought the unicycles back and just assumed that his friends would want to do that with him. And they did. And did you see how they were reaching out to others and wanting to get more unicycles there? As a matter of fact, once he got back from the World Unicycling Championships, a lot of those guys were so impressed with his story and they were from more developed countries, they started sending unicycle parts to him and sending back with a lot of stuff. And he's trying to grow that sport so they can grow those friendships. Ask people to do things with you. You know, the most important thing that Jesus did for us was die a sacrificial death on a cross to pay for our sins and then come back to life to prove that he was God. That is the most important thing he did. But that's not all he did. Don't forget that he spent 3 years of public ministry living with people, setting an example for us to follow. And one of the things that we see that Jesus did the most was reach out to people and make connections with them. He was constantly doing that. He was constantly inviting people into his life, and sometimes even more. If you still have your Bible open to Luke, I want you to flip forward a few pages to chapter 19. Okay, this is another fairly familiar story. Some of you have heard this before. It's about the story of Zacchaeus, but I want you to see this from a viewpoint of reaching out and building relationships, okay? By the way, this happened about a week and a half before Jesus was crucified. So this is like the last couple of weeks of Jesus' life, and he's still reaching out and making connections. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. Now, let me give you some context here. If he was a chief tax collector in Israel in the first century and was wealthy, that also means he was isolated. People hated these guys. They hated fellow Jews who were working for the Roman government and collecting taxes from them. And a big part of the collecting taxes was shaking people down and taking more than was owed. And that's the kind of person Zacchaeus was. So he was isolated. And yet he was just as interested in learning more about this Jesus than anyone else. Well, he wanted to see who Jesus was, verse 3. But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. And so he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him since Jesus was coming that way. Man, he was so hungry to connect with Jesus or just to know something, see him, that he just dropped his pride and climbed a tree, a grown man. Verse 5, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. You know, Jesus was always inviting people into his life, but this time, this is a little bit different. Jesus invited himself over to Zacchaeus' house, probably for lunch. Have you ever done that? Have you ever invited yourself to someone's house? Say, hey, I'd love to come for lunch today. What are you having? Yeah, I'll be there. I don't recommend necessarily that, but I think some of you aren't beyond that. We have a former staff member, a guy named Aaron Sanders here that many of you know. And Aaron left to go start a church in Galveston, Coastal Community Church. But when Aaron was still here, he was our student minister. He and Randy Dane, They crashed a Christmas party one time. Somebody dared them, probably Aaron. But they went in and they just crashed a Christmas party. Looked for a house in December. They had a lot of cars in front of it and they went in. Invited themselves in. Well, listen, the point is, okay, the point is inviting yourself into people's lives and inviting them into your life here. Zacchaeus, turns out, was happy to connect with Jesus. And it changed the course of his life. Jesus was always inviting people into his life. The people you invited into your life will probably be happy for you to invite them in. They probably will. Don't say their no for them. And who knows, just like with Zacchaeus, you may change the course of their life. Because if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you can't help, that can't help but spill over when you're building relationships with other people. Listen, who knows? You may change their life. Sure, some people will not accept your invite. That happens. We've all been rejected at times, okay? And that may happen multiple times. That's why it's so painful. That's why pain is such an enemy of connection. But don't give up. Listen, I get it. It can be painful, but move on and ask someone else. You will never have friends unless you are willing to initiate. You can do this. So what are some ways to initiate? Well, I got some of these ideas from the different folks I read, especially, again, Jenny Allen in her book, Find Your People. I recommend that, not just to ladies, but I think you would enjoy reading that as well. So here's some things to do that she suggests. Ask people to do stuff. Just ask people to do stuff. It will soon be cool outside. It really will. It's going to be cool eventually, okay? We thought it would never rain, and it finally rained. Now we get to cut our grass again. Well, it's going to be cool outside. Get a fire pit, they're not super expensive, and invite people over to make s'mores. Just something to break the ice, just something to get a conversation going, but just do that. Invite some neighbors over maybe, or maybe if you're really bold, she suggests putting your fire pit or maybe your picnic table in the front yard so that you see people walking down the street, you know, walking their dog. At least maybe their dog won't stop in front of your house if they see you out there in front of you, if you know what I mean. But no, just try some things. Get out there and try those. Invite somebody to a local high school football game. We've got about 5 or 6 schools represented here in our church. That is the thing to do. Friday Night Lights in Texas. That'll get conversations started. Invite someone to go with you. It'll be fun. You know, words don't always lead to connection, but fun connections almost always lead to words. Our small groups pastor, Joseph, is saying that all the time. All the time he's encouraging our small group leaders to do some things that are fun outside of the usual weeknight meeting time. Because when you change that connection, that relationship, you change the relationship. Just doing fun stuff can really enhance those friendships. I'll let him, he's going to talk more about that next week. But here's another idea. Not only ask people to do fun stuff, but ask people for stuff. Ask them for stuff, okay? Again, that's a little bit bold there. This may seem crazy, but I heard this a long time ago and I found it to be true. One of the best ways to connect with others, to make them feel kind of needed and wanted and appreciated, is for you to ask them to help you out with something. Ask a friend or a neighbor or an acquaintance or a coworker or a fellow student, ask them to help you with something or ask them for something. Instead of ordering something online that you need that maybe you're just going to use once or twice, consider asking your neighbor if you see that they have one and borrow it. Borrow a tool or something or a rake or whatever. Here's another one that I read. Instead of making a quick trip, this is old school, okay? Instead of making a quick trip to the grocery store for something you realize you don't have, for a recipe you're making something, ask your neighbor for some sugar or an egg to finish a recipe. I know it sounds crazy, but ask. Don't say their no. Put yourself out there. Find some ways to do stuff. Ask people to do stuff. Ask people for stuff. And while I'm saying that, listen, don't rule out people who are different than you. You don't have to have a million things in common with someone to get a connection, to become friends. Think about the people that Jesus chose to be his friends and his disciples. There were such a variety of people. Here's the God of the universe, the most, you know, brilliant beyond brilliant. And the guys he invites are fishermen. He invites uneducated fishermen to come with him. These people turned out to be world changers. Jesus saw something in them. He had uneducated fishermen. He also invited tax collectors who were hated. And he invited a revolutionary, a guy named Simon the Zealot. And zealots liked to kill tax collectors. That's one of their hobbies. He put them together. He invited prostitutes to come along and hang out with them. Children were welcome. Mothers-in-law. Jesus had the most diverse group of friends. You know what they had in common? Two things. They needed Jesus, even though they didn't know it, and they needed connection. He didn't call just one or two. He called a group of people, and they did life together. You can build relationships, meaningful relationships with people who think differently about a lot of things than you do, or people who worship differently, or who play differently, or even who vote differently. One of the things that has been so sad to me, one of the trends I think is the most unhealthy trend going on in our country, and maybe it's happening in other countries too, is we tend to be isolating ourselves from people who don't think and don't vote the way we do. And we're actually moving and transplanting, and we just hang around people who agree with us on everything, and we live in these echo chambers, and we start thinking that the whole world thinks like us, and it doesn't. You can have meaningful relationships with other people who are very different than you, especially Christians who are very different with you. You're missing out on some relationships if you just try to hang out with people who are just like you, who are your age, your background, or whatever. Man, reach out to people who live in a smaller house than you, different neighborhood, or maybe a much bigger house than you, people who went to a different college. Longhorns and Aggies can be friends. They can. Some of my best friends are Longhorns. People who you went to college and they didn't, or you didn't go to college and they did. People who've served in the armed forces and you haven't. That's a big part of their life. Pick people, find people who are different. Maybe someone who grew up in a different state than you, or even a different country. It would blow your mind to realize how many different countries we have represented here. Everybody here that's sitting in this room was not born in the United States. We have such a beautiful variety of people from all over the world who come here every week. And that can be such a cool dynamic as you get to know people who are different. Open your world to new possibilities. Put yourself out there. Take a risk. Become the kind of friend that you long to have, because listen, to find that person that you're really longing for, you've got to be that kind of person. You want someone to care about you? Then work at caring about others. And that takes me to this final point. Remember this, once that friendship starts rolling along and starts pulling out of the station and gets moving, there's gonna come a point where your friend is gonna have a need. And what they need is you to just show up. Show up for your people. That will galvanize a friendship like nothing else will. Listen, this is a letter. This line is from a letter that one of Jesus' closest friends, the Apostle John, he wrote to his friends near the end of his life, late in the very first century. He wrote this in this letter. He said, "Dear friends, let us love one another. For love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God." This is a reminder of Jesus' great commandment that made an impression on John. Jesus' greatest commandment, when he was asked, he said, is to love God and love others. We need to do both. We need to be a part of both. One of the ways of loving God is loving others, because God loves everyone. I noticed when people loved my kids when they were growing up, it just drew me to them. You love God's kids, it'll draw you closer to Him. Loving God and loving others. Folks, that'll pull you out of isolation. It really will. So show up when your friends need you. Don't wait for them to ask. Don't wait for them to ask. Just show up. Just come and help. Find a way to help. Don't wait to have the right words. It doesn't matter. And don't offer simple answers to their problems or advice you saw on some goofy meme or even your favorite Bible verse. Just show up. That's what connection looks like. You can do that. Let me pray. Then we're gonna continue this discussion. God, thank you so much that you made us relational. That you created us, you formed us for our relationship with you and others. Thank you that in this great good world that you created, the one thing you said at creation that was not good was for us to be alone. Father, all of us long to have relationships, but it's just difficult for some of us. And I pray that you'd help us. You'd help us to put ourselves out there. Help us to see opportunities that maybe we wouldn't notice otherwise. God, give us the boldness to take that first step and then maybe that second step. Give some of us the boldness to say yes when someone invites us into their lives. Help us to love you and show us how to love others. Help us to build that kind of community that not only enriches us and fulfills our needs and desires, but the kind of Christian community that can change our community, change our world here, point people to you. I ask that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, again, we understand that many times, because of the things we talk about on Sunday morning, that many of the topics are deserving of further discussion and many times a conversation. And so this morning, we want to briefly just have some conversation about this topic. So this morning, we have myself, Joseph Castillo, I'm the small groups pastor. We have Michelle Masterson, our connections minister, and Randy Dane, one of our executive pastors. And so, you know, talking this morning about the importance of friendships, the people who we surround ourselves with, the influence they have on us, kind of the first thing I want us to jump into is just how have your friendships determined the direction and the quality of your life?
I mean, you can hear and tell that if you have a bad idea friend who decides to crash a Christmas party of strangers, that before you know it, you can be there. So the true story behind that is that all that absolutely happened. So Aaron, he's in deep. Like, I'm still in the foyer visiting with folks and connecting, and Aaron's all the way in the kitchen, and he's made a plate of food.
No shame.
That's exactly how it went.
So my answer for that is pretty literal as far as, like, the direction of my life. So Randy and I have been friends since the first day of ninth grade. We've been like brother and sister. We went to high school, went to A&M, and then he went to go help plant a church, and I went to New York because Ashley told me about a ministry opportunity she knew of. When that was coming to an end, Randy asked me to come work for him at that church. We worked there together. He came down here. I went to Africa. When that was coming to an end, Randy asked me to come to Lake Jackson and work at Brazos Point with him. So I literally wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for a friendship I've had since high school. And so I'm thankful for that because I love being here, and it's, you know, I love this place and the best job ever, but pretty literally determined the direction of my life.
It kind of just sounds like Randy needs more friends.
That's actually kind of true, because, like, I think about just, direction just and quality one. Of life.
Yes, I'll call Michelle again.
About the same time frame that Michelle and I met was when Ashley and I met my wife now. And so, I mean, all these years, right? And these two friendships have had a huge impact. But I try to think about it in terms of, like, where we're at now, too. And it's still so true that, like, at present, my friendships are shaping the quality and the direction of my life. And we are so fortunate to have such deep and rich friendships. But it's also just kind of like everyday stuff. Like, lately, we've been working through this deal around the house of whether or not we would hire a contractor to do something, and thinking through how many of my close friends I've asked their opinion. I've had them help me think through this and work through it, like making sure that this is a wise investment, a good decision. Like, that's super helpful. So in terms of direction and quality, like, even in the most mundane of things, my friends have a huge impact on how we live, you know?
I love the saying that just the friends you keep is who you become. Like, you become your friends. Mm-hmm. And it really is so true, thinking about the direction and quality of your life. The best decisions I've ever made in my life, I was helped along, guided, given wisdom and direction by people, my friends around me. And some of the worst decisions, some of my biggest moments of getting in trouble, here is my friend sitting right next to me in the principal's office. Like, it really does go both ways. Our friends have huge influence on our life, which I think leads us to think about the importance of who we allow to have that type of influence, to sit in those seats in our life. And so how do you distinguish between who you befriend, but who actually gets to sit in those unique spots in our life?
That makes me think about something I talk about with my girls, my daughters, all the time. I want them to be friends with everybody. You know, going back to what Greg said this morning, let's be intentional about having friendships with people who are different than us. I want my kids to be known as kind and loving and friendly, and that to be a part of, you know, just their own personal character. But one of the things that we talk about is, in spite of the fact that I want you to be friends with everybody, is you'll have an inner circle or a core of friends. And in that inner circle, we need to be a little bit more choosy. And in that inner circle of your deepest, closest friendships, man, that's the space where I want you to be selective and find people that are going to pursue Jesus with you. That together we're going to have a like mind and we're going to have like hearts. And together we're going to push one another towards Jesus, towards faith and good deeds. And you know, I don't think that's just true for teenagers and preteens, right? I think that's true in our adult years too. Like you said, our friendships shape who we are. And so really exploring that inner circle and going, who has the greatest influence over my life?
Yeah, that inner circle is so, so important. And I think back to when Greg was talking about how the opposite of addiction is connection and the different enemies of connection that there are. And I think about the role that our inner circle, the people we're most deeply connected to, plays. And like even our mental health, you know, if you go to counseling, one of the first questions they're going to ask you is about your support system. And, you know, that can either be a strength or it can be a barrier to healing or processing or whatever it is. And so, like, I just think about how that inner circle is so important, and we need to pour into that as much as we want to get out of it.
Mm, that's good.
So practically, how do we take our relationships, our friendships, beyond the surface level and actually move them to a place where there is this, you know, depth there? What are some practical ways we can move our friendships towards depth?
I don't know if this is normal, but I can think of multiple instances where, like, guys that have this role in my life, where we really do have the kind of depth of conversation where we're talking about what kind of husband you're being, what kind of dad you're being, how you're spending your money, those kinds of personal things. Like, multiple guys that I've had intentional conversations with. We were friends at a periphery, and then there was an intentional conversation where we just said, you know what, let's do this. Let's go to these depths together. Let's invite each other into these spaces of our life, and let's be intentional about moving our friendship from where it is to where we want it to be. And again, I'm not sure if that's a normal thing, but I've got multiple instances where that's absolutely why I have these friends who are these people in my life, because we just decided to go there.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had like the define the friendship conversation of let's take this further. But like for me, I think one of the ways that can bring depth to a friendship is to just start being vulnerable yourself. Like I'm pretty much an open book, and I don't mind sharing things with people, like what God's teaching me, what he's doing in my life, how he's challenging me, how he's convicting me. And so with some of those friends who maybe are also Christ followers, but y'all haven't had that much depth yet, like as I share and am vulnerable, that kind of sets a different tone for the friendship, right? And then maybe eventually they'll share those things with you too. And then I think another way that is simple is to just ask a friend what you can be praying for them at the time. Like, you know, maybe send a text that's like, hey, I'm praying for different people in my life. What can I pray for you about? And most folks are willing to share that, and it kind of just starts scratching the surface of those deeper conversations that are to come. And like going back to the inner circle thing, when I think about the next steps with God that I've taken in my life, like some of those next steps happened because I had shared what I felt like God was doing with those in my inner circle. And then Ashley is like, hey, I heard about this ministry opportunity that sounds a lot like what you're thinking God's wanting you to do, or, you know, just other things. There's friends that have reached out and said, I know this is what's on your heart right now, and, like, it actually helps me take those next steps with God.
I even like the practicality that Greg threw out there, too, of, like, starting new friendships and the example of going to your neighbors and asking for some sugar or some eggs. And all I can think about when he said that is going over and being like, do you have all of these ingredients? Like, I don't have any.
Hey, you got some brownies?
Yeah, I'll just, do you have any cake? Like,
could you put together some
and
eggs?
Balloons.
And some cocoa.
Well, that's kind of all the time we have for today. But I think ultimately I'm encouraged. And I think for every person in the room, ourselves included, I think the big picture idea is that we would become more intentional with our friendships. And we would even take stock. Hey, how would you rate your current friendships? And which ones need to change? Or what changes would you like to make? For our friendships to not just be the people who show up around us, like in our proximity, in our life, and work, but also for us to be consciously thinking through, is this a good one? Is this a bad one? How do I move forward in this relationship? And how can I begin to move towards depth? So that is all the time we have today. Again, we have these conversations every week that we go further into some of the discussion about message and into other things. So we have a podcast called The Brazos Point Living Room. And if you're interested at all, you can find it anywhere you find podcasts. But thanks for listening today.